This is a Power 98.7 podcast. Now we're talking. Subscribe to Power 98.7 podcasts in iTunes or wherever you get your podcasts. There's more on power987.co.za.
I mean, if you drive through Tembisa or any one of Johannesburg's surrounding townships during a weekday and in the late morning, you'll find our township still filled with people after the morning rush to schools or places of work. And if you ever wanted to catch a perfect snapshot of South Africa's unemployment crisis, I suggest you take a drive through to go grab a spatula or support any one of the many car washers that dot our townships. I've often wondered what happens to the psychology of man and woman without having something to wake up for every morning. Whether it's for further education or to go to your place of employ, there has to be something more meaningful to having a place to go every day beyond the obvious of providing an income or a sense of security or an education. People often talk about employment with that negative connotation, stress or colleagues at work that aren't nice. But what's not appreciated is the importance to our psychological health. Now, in the case of South Africa, with an unemployment rate that is above 30% or close on 30%, right? Let me not be too dramatic with my numbers. That one of our guests in studio today once reminded me is above the levels of the Great Depression that came after the supposed roaring 20s in the US. That global depression that fed into nationalistic anger that would lead to the world into a Second World War. But I digress. But as someone most enamored by history, I have to ask whether these elevated levels of unemployment that South Africa suffers from is the primary cause of the social discord in our country. Already, we are one of the most unequal societies in the world because of our past. These are the perfect recipes, I think, for social discord, especially in times of feelings of hopelessness around our economic prospects. Now, here's something for us to consider further. Last week, banking workers were looking to strike because of the impact of artificial intelligence in their sector. Now, this is a skilled sector of the economy where machinery is learning their craft and unfortunately getting better and faster with it every day. Now, this is a global affliction. And today there was a Wells Fargo report suggesting that 200,000 jobs will be lost in the banking sector because of AI. Now, across the services sector, a growth sector in this country over the past two decades or so, AI is the real threat to future employment. And now let's go to our older industries, coal mining. Now, this is probably the most mechanized of our mining sectors, which employs some 80,000 people. It faces a threat from domestic and global focus on clean energy. So we are clearly in for a long season, I fear, of further structural changes in employment in the country, further complicated by the fact that we are a young population. Now, joining me in our Power Boardroom segment this evening to discuss an employment problem, and not to try and necessarily find a solution, right, but to rather focus on how it affects the overall state of South Africa Inc. and how it will feed into our economic weakness for years to come, is my good friend Candy Govey, business executive coach, industrial psychologist and founder of Zahira Groups, Zahira Patfudi, David Ansara, chief operating officer for the Center of Risk Analysis, and he's joined by Begum Mahlobo, economic student at UNISA and intern at the Center for Risk Analysis. And for a second time on Power Business, and maybe someone who actually inspired this conversation is Kamal Ramburuth. Kamal. Okay. Hey, you got to help me with your surname, bro.
This is the last time.
Last time, bro. Okay. Kamal.
Kamal Ramburuth Hurt.
Thank you. Okay. Chairperson of Rethink Economics Africa. It's a really full house in the studio today, and I'm so nervous, and I generally do get nervous a lot, but today, today is it's a big day for me. But anyway, I'm going to play favorites here and pose the first question to Candy, an old friend of mine, not old as in person, right, Candy? Yeah? Okay, apologies there, yeah? Now, Candy, you've been coaching professionals and executives. Some of them have lost their jobs and are looking to get back into the game. In your coaching, what has your experience been of their frustrations and the difficulty of finding jobs in this environment?
So thanks, Ron. And I think maybe let me start here. And I'm so glad that you started when you put in your intro. You spoke about how, you know, employment is not so much about the income. It is, yes, about the income, but there's more to it. Mm. And I do think that psychological experience is what, you know, employment offers us. Yeah. So if you think of, you know, some of the benefits that are pretty much, you know, that we really think about. It's the idea that, you know, my time is structured. So when I go and I wake up in the morning, I make breakfast and I go and I, you know, get my coffee ready and I leave the house. I need to beat traffic, get into the office. Everything seems structured.
Yeah.
There's the connections that you make beyond the individuals that you work with, that you stay with at home. Now I've got social contacts, you know, at the workplace, people that I can meet up for coffee with, take a lunch break with. Then you think of that almost, you know, a purpose, you know, a collaborated sort of purpose. There's one vision. We all are aiming to achieve something.
Yeah.
So when you go to work, there's something, you know, about going, and we know that we've got a shared purpose. So one of the things that came out, and I think as you start to coach individuals, that all of a sudden, all these things have fallen away, you know. And I like using, there's a very classical model that they use called the Kubler-Ross stages of grief model.
Yeah.
And it typically sort of tells you where people are when they face, which is one of, if you think of unemployment, one of the top 10 traumatic experiences that people face in their lives. And all of a sudden you're depressed, you're angry, you're in denial. So for instance, if you think of depression and anger, particularly, I think those are the two things that really come out when I coach individuals. It's the idea that, oh my gosh, this company has decided to let me go. I am so mad. I'm so angry. I've been the best employee. Then you're also depressed. You've got denial. So those individuals who insist on going to work or just leaving the house, they're used to that routine. So they'll typically go back. Let me grab my, you know, my laptop bag. Let me grab my notes. Let me continue with
that whole
business as usual, that routine, because that's something that I've been used to. So you meet those individuals in your coaching sessions who are going through that. And then there are some people that are accepting, you know, this is it. This is my fate. I accept that this is the reality. And so those are some of the individuals that I've met. But it's really, you know, it's interesting because in as much as it is depressing for most, there's a sense of fear. What next? Where do I go from here? It's also opportunities that come with some individuals saying, oh my gosh, here's an opportunity for me. I'm now out of mainstream employment, but I've got an opportunity to start afresh, to get to decide what I want. So almost a sense of let's make lemonade out of these lemons.
Exactly. Zaira, I mean, in your 15 years as an industrial psychologist, what does having an employment mean for an everyday person? And how central is it to providing a purpose?
Thank you for that. It's very, very important. When we look at what are the psychological benefits of having employment, we look at two ways. Firstly, it provides or it meets deficiency needs. And by deficiency needs, we mean survival needs. So when you are employed, you are able to have a shelter, you are able to eat, you are able to have clothing, you are able to actually make sure safety and security as well. You're able to take care of that, whether it's physical safety. And those are things, the deficiency needs or basic needs, if they are there, they don't cause satisfaction. But if they are not there, they cause dissatisfaction. And when you want to look at the impact of unemployment, even in the societal or national view, those are the basic things that would cause riots. Those are the things that would actually even cause xenophobia that we are looking at, because people are feeling like my country is not meeting my basic needs. I don't feel secure. I don't feel safe. And so those that have, they fight against them. So the second part of the psychological impact of employment is the what we call growth needs. And I think the coach has touched on them. You start to know, you have career growth, so you can engage mentally, cognitively, and physically. Self-esteem, you know, when if you are not employed, your self-esteem, your self-worth, your own identity become crushed. You know, you don't see yourself as valuable in the society. And actually people around you aggravate that, because once you become unemployed, people that accepted you in their social circle, they no longer accept you. So that is a problem. Also, the ability to, I mean, meaning and purpose. And also freedom. I think when you start earning income, you're able to explore your passion and your meaning. So the working also I was looking at research that shows that people that work, just even working 30% of the time, it takes care of your mental health.
Mm.
So if you don't work, there are psychological impacts. You know, people go into hopelessness, people go into depression, anger.
Mm.
And that affects, you know, it affects even families.
Yeah.
And one person asked, is there a difference between men and women
mm-hmm.
in terms of how unemployment affects them? It's only in relation to how we configure the roles.
Mm.
So for those that, if women, for example, believe in an egalitarian society that they should work, there's no difference in the impact. So women will be impacted the same way
yeah.
that men. But if women feel it's the role of the men to provide, it doesn't affect their unemployment.
Mm.
Yeah.
All right. David, I want to bring you in here. I mean, since the 80s, South Africa has been dealing with this unemployment problem. Would you imagine that it has fed into the social discord into our society? I mean, youth unemployment is above 50%, or yeah, 50%. And in the short, at least, to medium term, it looks like a problem that remains as a risk factor to the SA economy. How much of a factor is it?
Ron, absolutely. It's a critical factor. Youth unemployment, as you mentioned, is a serious crisis in the country. So, like you suggested, 56% of young people between the ages of 15 and 24 years of age are unemployed. Mm. So you compare that to the national unemployment rate of 29%.
Mm.
You know, that's a huge disparity. So basically, if you're a young person, you're more likely to be unemployed in South Africa
yeah.
Than not.
Mm.
Or than in a job. Mm. So what are the social implications of this? What are some of the social risks? So I think first thing to point out is that there's a direct correlation between reductions in unemployment and economic growth.
Mm.
So if you look back to South Africa's recent economic history, in the mid-2000s, about 2005, 6, and 7, we had three consecutive years of economic growth that was above 5%.
Yeah.
Okay,
that's targeted, the holy grail.
Yes. Mm. I mean, look, there was a fairly conducive global environment, but there were prudent macroeconomic policies that were implemented during that time.
Mm.
And so the, you know, the unemployment at that stage was around 22-23%.
Yeah.
You know, many commentators and academics were saying, well, you know, this is jobless growth. But if you contrast that to the 29% we have today,
yeah.
I mean, I think we would take it.
Mm.
So if you look back at that period and you look at the incidence of public violence in South Africa, which is recorded by the SAPS, so these are violent service delivery protests, violent strike action. At that time, the incidents were about 1,000 such instances of violence per year.
Yeah.
Okay. That's
that
quite
was 2005, so that's 7 years.
Exactly.
Yeah.
But if you look at the same figures today, that is up to 3,500 violent service delivery protests per year. So that's about 10 a day.
Yeah.
Okay. So, and I think there's, you know, correlation is not causation, but there's a direct relationship there. Those are young men in particular who are frustrated. There's been a crisis of race expectations. The, you know, normal democratic channels are not open to them. They are idle. You know, they've got a lot of energy and they direct that at violence towards the state and towards others. So there's a significant social risk attached to unemployment, as well as obviously the economic drag, the lack of dynamism, the lack of productivity that it means to have, you know, 6 million people without work.
Yeah. Now, welcome back, Kamal, and I will learn your surname, proper pronunciation. But without a solution to this jobs crisis, what is the impact on social cohesion and in turn prospects for the SA economy?
Well, I think that that's kind of mostly just been discussed by David.
Mm.
But yeah, I think if you look at the ratio of the number of people who are unemployed, right?
Mm.
So let's take a combination of what the previous speakers have said, right? 56% of youth are unemployed, right? Mm. That's what we're saying. So more than half.
Mm.
Then we now know, and we've known for a long time that These things have a huge effect on depression, your feelings of self-worth. You know, you tend to get like quite angry. You feel humiliated. You know, you get anxiety. You feel this feeling of anxiety and rejection from being unemployed. And if you think about the fact that half of our youth are dealing with these feelings,
yeah.
And this prospect, we have a massive number of young people who are struggling with mental health issues, right? And that's a serious, serious problem that we need to take quite seriously, because I mean, you need a healthy, you know, population of people for anything to work, for your society to work, for your economy to work, and yeah. So I think that's a really big problem. But it would also have been nice if in this panel of five of us, we could have had a young unemployed person here sitting with us, so that, you know, we're not speaking about people without them present, because this isn't an academic debate. This is a serious thing that's ingrained in our society.
Well, we have a next best thing. We have an intern at the Center for Risk Analysis. Well, I was coming to the next big Mahlova economic student at UNISA. Just your view on the unemployment question, and particularly with regards to that youth unemployment crisis.
excuse me. I mean, it's really tragic, the fact that we have 56% of unemployed youth. And I truly can't add more to what have been to what has been said on like the psychological issues of such. So, as an economic student, what I look at is what are the causes of unemployment, right? So before I make my point, I would just like to touch on the point that you made about like digital banking, essentially, like AI, essentially, right? So, the thing is, right? Yes, I think it was like 10,000 employees will be retrenched by the banking sector, if not mistaken.
Yeah, around those figures, yep.
So I'd just like to explain as to why this is happening as well, right? So the reason why we are moving to more digital space in the banking sector is because you and me, we don't go to the bank anymore to do our transactions. In fact, we do it over our phones, right? So the banks see this and they say, okay, so consumers are now more digital in the approach to essentially internet banking and such. So we need to provide services in that sector, right? And we need to make sure that we provide this at the cheapest price. Otherwise, other banks will see this opportunity and seize it, right? So yes, they might, they will need less people on the face-to-face daily daily transactions for such internet bank, I mean banking processes, right? So what will happen is there will be demand for employment in those sectors, the technological centers, sectors like the coding. There will be more jobs offered for coding and such like that. So it's not to say that employment, there will be massive levels of unemployment if you go digital. It's just that employment will move from one sector to the next sector, just like how it did in the Industrial Revolution, right? So
that's the best case scenario.
Exactly. Which contributed to actually more people being employed and higher levels of standard of living.
Now, I want to ask about, you know, South Africa now faces the problem of keeping our youth in the education system. I mean, of the million odd kids that enter grade one, something like half, Kamala, come out at grade 12. How important is it keeping our youth in this pipeline even longer, especially when there's this lack of jobs going in the country?
So, Ron, it's a really good question, and I think it relates to what Becky has just spoken about. Because if you look at our graduates, right, the unemployment rate amongst our graduates hasn't really exceeded 3%, right? So, and this is university, mainly university graduates. You know, amongst TVET colleges and those graduates, it's the percentage is a lot higher. But if you look at the graduate statistic, it's telling us that with education, the probability of you being unemployed is reduced drastically. We don't have a problem with graduate unemployment from, you know, our higher education institutions. So this is telling us, right, that that, you know, tertiary education and ensuring that our education from basic education all the way through has a big impact. And, you know, this discussion about AI, it is causing unemployment, but as it was just said, it doesn't need to, right? Because you can shift your labor force from one sector to another sector. But what that depends on is it depends on the skill level and the ability to transfer skills within your labor force, right? And that then again comes down to unemployment. It's about not just about having a really good solid basic foundation, you know, from a grade R all the way through to a tertiary education qualification, but it's also, you know, educating our adult population, you know, not just people in schools, but, you know, you and I who might want to go to another, you know, industry at a later stage. And that requires lifelong learning, right? And that's not a culture in South Africa. We don't have a culture of lifelong learning. And it's something that will really have a really big impact if we push it forward.
Candy, employers out there, what type of people are they looking for right now? And are soft skills, I guess, more valued than before.
Yeah. And look, I think Kamal actually raises a very important point around how we start to change the skills or the expertise that we currently have in our organizations into ones that are almost future-proof. And I do think that the skills that are required for jobs in the next 20, look, maybe not even 20, maybe 20 years is actually quite a long time, but we're talking about skills that you probably need to prepare yourself for tomorrow. I think the first thing, and it ties into what Kamal was just saying, it's change. It's the ability to be agile. You need to actually be open to the idea of change. I think a lot of organizations are seeing themselves transforming at a rapid pace. And what you start to see, even in some of these coaching sessions, is individuals that are struggling with that change. All of a sudden, you know, I'm underemployed, which is, I guess, is another aspect of when you're underemployed. That means, you know, you get into a workspace, and because your job has changed, you know, your skills that are required for you to fulfill your job have probably been lowered. That means lower benefits, you know, lower opportunities. That's another debate for another day. But it's that ability to say, this is what I need to change. Am I able to change as fast, you know, is needed for this organization. I think emotional intelligence, it's been spoken widely. It's something that one still needs to adopt. We need to know how to communicate with each other. So communication is also one of those, I think, top skills that you need to have. There are a range of skills, I think, that are required for the employee of tomorrow. And I do think that there is a call for both organizations and for the individuals that are undergoing this change, so to speak, to sort of adopt and run with some of those requirements.
All right. No, Candy, thanks very much for that. We have to break for Power Headline News, and we'll come back to this conversation.
Breaking down business like no other.
Power Business on Power 98.7.
Thank you, and welcome back to the final 30 minutes of our show this evening. And in our Power Boardroom, we're having a very deep conversation with regards to unemployment and just its overall impact on the South African economy going forward over the next couple of years, especially as we face challenges of AI and the like. Just a reminder for listeners, we have Candy Govey in studio with us, a business executive coach, industrial psychologist and founder of Zahira Group, Zahira Patudi, David Ansara, chief operating officer for the Center for Risk Analysis, Begi Mahlobo, economic student and an intern at the Center for Risk Analysis. And also with me, I have Kamal Ramaruthher, chairperson of Rethink Economics Africa. I didn't look at him when I pronounced that. Now,
making progress.
Zahira, just, we've had the first 30 minutes. Just almost. Before I get to Zahira, I must remind callers to call listeners to call us on 0861-987-000 just to make my producer happy there. But Zahira, you've heard the tone of in the first 30 minutes with regards to unemployment problem. How does it then feed into just the social makeup of the South African society, the socioeconomic challenges that we face in South African society?
I think this was discussed earlier on, and I want to just say that from a social perspective, we have seen the aggression, the violence from in terms of industrial action or service strikes. From a family perspective, we see a lot of families that actually break because of unemployment in the family, you know. And I think when we look at the concept, the whole notion of social cohesion, we first of all, you find that those that don't have and are not able to participate, you know, they're not able to afford. You know, healthcare, they're not able to afford, you know, quality education. And that's where the anger and the violence comes from, you know. And on the other hand, those that are actually employed and those that are feel they have, they can actually also feel resentment towards those that are not working to say, there's a small percentage of people that pay tax. There's a small percentage of people that actually contribute. And you start looking at locus control, internal versus external locus of control to say, why is there an entitlement mentality? Who is supposed to create employment? You know, is it government or can we actually create employment? That's the first thing. And the other thing, I want to latch on what you said earlier on about looking at how the world of work has changed. There is no longer job security.
Yeah.
I think that mentality we need to get out of it. Mm-hmm. And there is a spiral career development where you can actually change careers actually 5 times mm-hmm. in your career lifetime. But most importantly, you can be a freelancer and make and create, generate income from different jobs,
mm-hmm.
you know. So your security is in your skill.
Yeah.
Is not in the job.
Mm.
And that's the mentality that we need to actually instill in our youth. The other thing is that many companies are moving away from looking at qualifications in terms of employment. They're looking at attitude. They're looking at learning agility. They're looking at people who have got a global view. They're looking at people, and it's our responsibility as people to look at the sectors that are changing and look at how your skills can change so that you can be marketable continuously. So yeah,
David, I mean, employers, and there's a whole bunch of retrenchments happening, I know, in the old industries, and also unfortunately in the supposed new industries. Should there be some sort of like of a social pact with South Africa? I know in places like in Germany, when it comes to AI, there's almost like an agreement of how much it can feed into job security. But what should employers be doing, and should they be considering just the state of society as a large, as much as they're looking at the bottom line, which has always been the central thrust of corporate South Africa?
Well, Ron, we have no shortage of social compacts in South Africa, yeah. But mm-hmm. The problem is that we're not incentivizing businesses to employ people.
Mm.
And remember that jobs are the byproduct of economic activity and productivity and value generation.
Mm.
They're not the target. So when we talk about creating jobs,
yeah.
we need to think of it a bit differently. We need to think of how can we induce firms to open their doors and to hire particularly those young people that we spoke about earlier.
Mm.
And one of the things that government in particular can do is to loosen up labor policy.
Yeah.
So we currently have a variety of protections, Basic Conditions of Employment Act, the Labor Relations Act, the National Minimum Wage Act, which is statutory minimum wage provisions. And these policies constrain businesses.
Mm.
It's very difficult to fire delinquent employees. Employers are less likely to take a risk on particularly young new employees. So the effect is that we have so many people who are basically locked out of the market.
Mm.
And, you know, we spoke about the skill shortage. And whilst I agree that education is very important and we should do everything we can to capacitate the education sector, unfortunately, the education system is currently failing the vast majority of the students that are in that system. And one of the ways in which you can get lateral skills transfer is on-the-job training.
Mm.
Okay, so if we made it easier for young people to be employed, they would be able to acquire the skills that they so desperately need, and then they would be able to compete in the market with those skills.
Mm.
And they wouldn't have to rely on this dysfunctional education system.
Mm.
So, you know... one of the policy proposals would be a job seekers exemption certificate,
mm-hmm.
which would be for young people. If they can demonstrate that they've been unemployed for about 6 months, then they can be exempted from all labor legislation. This would be quite an unpopular proposal amongst certain quarters of the tripartite alliance, I'm sure.
Mm-hmm.
But, this would free up those millions of young people to be able to freely contract their labor on terms of their choosing. And we should empower them as much as possible to do so.
Mm. Kamal, labor laws, yeah?
I've got a slightly different view there, because I feel like it's often, that's the go-to, right? When you say that, you know, there's a problem with unemployment, and the go-to is always that, you know, the labor laws are too stringent, right? But you must also remember at the same time that 1/3 of the labor force is secure, right? So 2/3 of our labor force is actually precarious, right? So already keep that in mind, that most people in work are in it precariously. And now when you're saying reduce the labor laws, you know, what are you saying? You want the other third to live precariously as well, right? So, I mean, I think it's an easy answer. I don't think it's the right answer, right? And I think that we need to be honest about where these jobs are coming from, right? Mm. And that is from firms, right? It's from firms and it's from industrial policy. Those are the places, SMMEs in particular, right?
Mm.
So, in most functional, large economies, the contribution of small businesses to employment and GDP is over the 85% mark, yeah. right? So SMMEs account for 85% of employment creation in the EU, and an ILO study has recently shown that 91% of firms in Europe have 1 to 8 employees, right? So most of job creation is coming from our SMMEs, right? And the SMME sector is additionally responsible for around 60 to 70% of contributions to global GDP, right? And globally, over 95% of enterprises are SMMEs, right? Which employ, you know, 60 to 70% of the working population. SMMEs are really important, and we all know it, and it's said often, right? By comparison, in South Africa, our SMMEs currently account for only 47% of employment and contribute to just over 20% of GDP, right? So there's a lot of potential for growth here. And SMMEs are mostly exempted from a lot of the labor laws you're talking about. So I'm not convinced by that argument, right? So the other place that I think we need to be discussing around employment is in industrial policy. And we need to be discussing it in industrial policy for two reasons. The first is that no country has gone from being an underdeveloped country to being a developed country without going through a period of industrialization and promoting their manufacturing sector, which is one of the biggest drivers of employment creation outside of your SMMEs, right? So I think that there's a lot of work that needs to be done on the industrial sector, which I'm willing to discuss more if it needs me.
Right. You know, Peggy, you wanted to have a
comment? I just wanted to add on what David said. So if we want more unskilled youth people to be employed, we need to incentivize businesses to hire more laborers, right? So if you're making it more expensive for businesses to hire people, they're obviously not going to hire more people. And that's what these policies do. They make it more expensive to hire certain individuals. Let's say, for example, I've never had any experience in working. So less than 3,500 would be enough for me to actually acquire the skill that I need. So if you make it expensive for firms to hire people, they won't hire as many people as they would like. And instead, they will look for cheaper alternatives, which they look to other countries, which has less regulations on such matters.
I guess here we're not talking about labor unions here and their role in this. And you see, and from the panel here, I mean, labor unions are there to support and just protect those with jobs, are very necessary in this country. But what is the view about labor unions? Are they holding up job creation at all? If anyone was.
If I may say, one of the, you know, the whole notion of equal pay, equal work, and also forcing employers to hire contractors within, if you work within 3 months or more than 3 months, you should be employed. I think that affected organizations and firms. Instead of being able to hire people on a flexible, as a flexible workforce, which gives them employment, but also gives them opportunity to gain experience. Employers are now afraid to do that. So I think for us, we need to always look at, when we implement legislations, we always need to look at the pros and cons. You know, from a labor organization perspective, it creates job security. But from a business perspective, it becomes a pain. And for SMMEs, as an example, as someone who runs a medium company, I would rather want to have flexible, you know, working arrangements because you're not sure, you know how you're going to grow. You're still growing. But at the same time, so if you hire somebody just to terminate them, it's another process. So there are labor legislations where I feel we could look at the pros and cons, and you find that it actually works against the very thing that we want to do. Are unions necessary? They are necessary, you know, and we don't have to have an adversarial relationships with unions. If you have that positive relationship, they can make sure that the needs of the employers, the low-level employees, are actually taken care of, and they're always on the agenda. You know, and I think that's a mentality that, from a business perspective, as someone who's also worked with unions, we need to change. So there is a benefit to labor organizations, actually.
David, your view on the unions with regards to this problem we have with unemployment?
Well, I think the unions play quite a strong role. So even though the industrial unions, so National Union of Mine Workers, NUMSA, they've experienced high degrees of attrition, and, you know, their income is falling because of, you know, constraints in the economy, fewer workers means, you know, fewer rents from those workers. So their power has diminished over the last few years. But if you look at government workers, so now bear in mind that there are 16 million people in South Africa who have a job, and 2 million of those, 1/8, work for the government, either at the national, provincial, or local level. Many of those employees are unionized, and their interests are very much about securing their jobs and will push back. If you think of, for example, the South African Democratic Teachers Union, they are very protective over their unionized workers. Any attempts to introduce performance-related standardized tests on their performance as teachers, they push back against that very aggressively, often going out on lots of strikes, students not being taught, etc. So they still form a critical part of the trade union federation, COSATU, and COSATU is an alliance partner, and COSATU uses that power to keep the status quo in place when it comes to policy. And if you go to NEDLAC, which is quite close by here, this is a council where matters of economic importance and legislation are discussed. The national minimum wage legislation was discussed there, and you'll see it's a big auditorium, and there are lots of chairs everywhere, and there's a little sign for government, and there's a sign for business, and there's a sign for labor, but there's no sign for the unemployed. Where is the voice of those unemployed people? They're at the margins of our society. We need to kind of crowd them in to the labor market.
Sure. All right. On the panel, we have a caller from Craig Hall. Nina?
Hi, how are you? Ron, I'm hearing what we sort of continuously hear in this country, and that's the opposition of one set of people. For instance, one of your panelists said that, she as an SMME person would love flexibility so that she can develop her business. And on the other hand, we're talking about restrictions on that kind of approach, because it means that people will sort of lose value, and you're talking about keeping the status quo in place. I'm not sure if your guests can talk about it now, if you could have a separate program on that, even with these guests. Because I'm wondering how, given that this is, it's been a discussion for years, actually, in the arena, how one solves this problem, that you've got different stances. And in fact, there's value in both of them. I mean, but if you've got a stopgap where there's simply that conflict on the table and you can never resolve it, then of course you maintain the status quo of unemployment. So I'm suggesting there's got to be a status new that somehow can encompass the diversity of these positions so that you can get flexibility. Thanks, Ron.
All right. Thank you very much for that, Nina. Anyone want to take Nina's comment through? With regards to getting some way forward with flexibility, is there any way there'll be a breakthrough with regards to those discussions when it comes to labor unions?
Well, I think definitely the job seekers exemption certificate is one way of doing that. I mentioned the labor laws and the political economy issues, right? So, I think that exemption certificate, you could still maintain the existing legislative paradigm. I understand that that's quite difficult to change overnight. But this would be a very quick win. This would say, well, let's just see. Let's give these young people the ability to compete actively in the market and see what they're capable of. I'm sure these people have a lot of potential, a lot of energy, and you certainly see that there's high demand amongst the youth for jobs. So let's give them the chance.
All right, come on. Okay, go for it.
I was saying, the whole idea of internships and learnerships enable that. And the companies are willing to do that based on the fact that they can get money back. But I think for me, for example, what I do is rather than hire somebody on a permanent basis, you hire them on a fixed-term contracts maybe of 12 months, but make sure, because what the labor organizations are fighting for is that if you hire people on a non-permanent basis, make sure that their salary is equitable to those that are permanent, as long as they are doing the same job. If you hire people, whether on a permanent and non-permanent, they're doing the same job, but they're earning highly different, that's where they're now saying, but that's an unfair labor practice.
Sure, that's a really good point. I think that there's already two kind of initiatives that I know of that kind of do what we're talking about here. Mm-hmm. The one is the Extended Public Works Program, which is run by the government, and that's like labor-intensive areas like maintenance, clearing vegetation, plugging water leaks, construction of roads that we see all of the time. A lot of those people are part of the Expanded Public Works Program that the government, you know, has put forward, and it's an initiative that tries to create job opportunities and some kind of, you know, skills in cities for unemployed, semi-skilled, and unskilled workers. Right. But again, these are temporary, but it is a similar idea from what we're talking about here. The problem with that, again, is that, you know, it's not permanent, and that, you know, it's often the same people who get that little bit of experience every time. There's another thing that's being championed called the Youth Employment Services. Yes. Mm. Right. And the YES mission is to transform South Africa's youth into an active economic participants, yeah. Right? And the idea behind YES is that they're trying to create SMMEs, right? Mm. And it's a brilliant initiative where, you know, they're trying to kind of push youth to be incorporated into like agent trader models, and try to get people to get like a lot of skills, smaller skills. You know, by the time your YES program would have ended, you know, you would have ideas of, you know, how to, you know, fix a smartphone, or, you know, trade as an agent to sell phones or data or airtime and those kind of things, right? So I think those are some really interesting programs that are happening at the moment. And I think the one with the most impact would be the YES ones, because they are creating the employment that come from those SMMEs. But yeah, I think it's been mentioned before, there's a lot of things that are constraining our SMMEs, right? Mm. You know, there's red tape that shouldn't be there, not always necessarily around labor issues, but around other issues. Mm. Like, am I allowed to sell on this road? Mm. You know, if I'm selling foodstuffs, you know, there's a whole bunch of regulatory things around selling chisanyama on the side of the road that stifle, you know, small businesses, right? And those are the kind of regulatory things that, you know, need to be taken away. But yeah, I think that's those are two really interesting ones that are happening at the moment. But I think there's a catch 22 here, right? Mm. And the catch 22 for young people is that you need experience to get a job, and you need a job to have your experience, right? And it's a really difficult catch 22 that a lot of young people struggle with, because often the mentality when you're studying isn't that I should be studying and doing an internship like Becky is, right? Mm. A lot of the mentality is that, you know, I'm here to study, I need to study, get good marks, show my parents my good marks, and then I'm going to find a job. So I think there needs to be a shift in the mentality amongst students that we need to champion. And universities need to champion this, and TVETs need to champion this, to say, while you are studying, on the weekend, you know, you do some work for, you know, a firm, or on a Friday evening, or, you know, a couple of hours a day, so that by the time you graduate, you've got that signal to say, I've got some kind of experience. Because the kind of experience that people are looking for, as was mentioned earlier, isn't to know exactly how to be the CEO of the company. Mm. That's not the experience people are looking for. They want to see that you know how a firm works, you know how to be hardworking, and that you've got some kind of idea how the organizational stuff within the firm will work. Mm. And that you've got the, you know, ambition to go and do an internship while you're studying. Mm. So those are actually just signals, right? And not something always in and of themselves.
Okay. David?
Yeah, so just a quick point on the Expanded Public Works Program, which is basically a make work scheme. Mm. So the national minimum wage, consider that statutory wage is 20 rand per hour, or 3,500 rand per month. Mm. But now, employees of the government's own Expanded Public Works program, there's an exemption for them. They get paid 11 rand per month. Mm. So now you have to ask the question, why does the government think that it's okay for the private sector to pay 20 rand per hour, but they can't afford that rate themselves when they're paying for these construction projects and infrastructure projects? You know, so I think we, you know, also just have to, you know, to think, well, you know, what are the trade-offs here? You know, how is that a program like that financed? You know, that's going to come from income from taxpayers. So, you know, that could be capital that could be used, allocated to more efficient endeavors. Mm. The YES program, very well-intentioned program, has gotten thousands of young people into internships. But, you know, if you think of that very long queue of 6 million people.
Yeah.
Basically, what these kind of market matching programs are doing, they're taking people from the back of the queue and pushing them to the front.
Mm.
But are they shortening the queue?
Yeah.
You know, that those skills are useful, but are those jobs actually sustainable?
All right. I've got another caller from Santon. Jimmy?
Hey, how's it, Ron?
All right, yourself?
I'm well, thanks. I just want to make a comparison, eh? To Europe, like particularly universities there, eh? So in European universities, you have things called junior enterprises, right? So junior enterprises basically are fully fledged companies, yeah, that are run by students.
Yeah.
Yeah. So what happens there is that you have a situation where students in universities are actually exposed to the actual running of a company from a young age.
Mm.
Okay?
Mm.
So these people are, first of all, number one, likely to be more effective in the employment sector. Understand? But more importantly is that because they already have the experience of running a business, they are more likely to start a more successful business after graduate, understand?
Mm.
Which makes them less reliant on looking for jobs and things like that. And I think, in my opinion, is that the problem that we are facing right now in South Africa is that we are currently employed by previous generations, understand? And we have no idea about who's going to employ the next generation, because the current generation is now focused on trying to be employed, and which is a bit of a problem. So I think perhaps if we start encouraging people to start small, understand? Because another thing is that previously is that we tried to push a whole entrepreneurship thing, understand, in the country. But a lot of us tried to go too big too quick, understand?
Mm.
So I think if we start encouraging people to start small, start being self-employed and draw the difference between being self-employed and being an entrepreneur, I think that's the best way to start encouraging people to become more financially independent. And by being financially independent, we are more likely to start stimulating the economy. You get what I'm saying?
Totally.
In the greater scheme of things. Yeah. Yeah. Right. So that's just my contribution.
All right. Thanks very much for that, yeah. Jim Santon. Candy, as we go to close, final thoughts. Do you think we deserve like a deeper introspection of what employment does to South Africans, and instead of this big, only this macro focus? This is your closing ambits for the show.
Yeah, absolutely, Ron. And I think a lot has been said in the conversation. Mm. And I guess, you know, as I was listening to this to this conversation, the one thing that kept popping into my head, and some of the things that came out or come out in some of the coaching sessions, particularly, are the individuals that are not necessarily unemployed. So when you talk about productivity, how do we still maintain the productivity of the economy when those individuals that are still employed stay in those organizations, in those businesses?
Mm.
So there's a term called survivor syndrome. So typically what we do is we focus on individuals that are affected by the change, that are affected by unemployment, but we forget about those that actually stay behind, and the fear that I might be next.
Yeah.
I might lose my job next. Mm. You know, am I still capable of assisting this company to develop further?
Mm.
So I think there's also that element of how do you enhance the productivity or the resources that stay in these organizations to still perform at a better level. But I do think that, you know, as I said, I think a lot has been said. The psychological impact is really, really massive. We don't talk about it, but you see it coming through in some of those conversations. And it's a battle, but I think it's conversations that are worth having.
All right. You know, can David, your final closing words?
I'd just like to close on a final thought. I mean, the best way to learn is to get paid to do so. I mean, that's what internships do. They essentially expose you to the real world. I mean, it's very different from university where it's only theory-based.
Mm.
I mean, I can use myself as an example. The stuff that I do in the real world is very different from, like, theory models and such. And so the best way for people to expose themselves to getting that experience that they need is to essentially get more internships. And I think there should be exemptions for such low-skilled, unemployed young people.
David, you're fine.
I think something that economists speak about is labor economists speak about match quality. So this is your ability as a worker to find a job that really suits you, right?
Mm.
So Candy mentioned in previous comments, you want to be able to find the right fit for you, for yourself, right? So a more flexible labor market gives you that. It instills a sense of risk-taking, It means that you're more likely to take on a temporary job, get some skills that'll be useful for the next gig, and then move on. So I think this idea of decent work is kind of holding us back. We need to inject a lot more dynamism and a lot more risk-taking and flexibility into our labor market.
We need to start teaching our children from primary school about issues of employment, self-employment, and also I believe that there needs to be more alliances and work between the higher education sector and the business sector in terms of creating curriculum that is relevant and preparing students for the workplace. Mm. But like I said, remember, a job does not provide you security.
Mm, not anymore. Kamal.
It's your skill.
It's your skill.
Yes.
Sure. I think if I were to just point to a way forward, we need to really improve our education and skills training from birth to retirement.
Yeah.
We need to promote our SMMEs in a serious way. And we need industrial policy that promotes our manufacturing sector, all of which we should really focus on creating decent work.
Mm.
Because the psychological problems we've been speaking about don't go away when you're exploited, right? So, you know, let's not pretend that exploitation in your workplace is any better than, you know, the kind of psychological issues that you have when you're unemployed. They're both bad, you know, and we need to try to find solutions that aren't wholly bad.
All right. Thank you very much for this panel. It was an excellent conversation, but thanks for joining me this evening.
You've been listening to a Power 98.7 podcast. For more podcasts, visit power987.co.za or subscribe wherever you get your podcasts.